evening, everyone, and welcome to this week's photo show. As usual, I have my friends Damien and Ian here to help us talk through the events and products and items that we've been seeing over the last few weeks. So good evening, Damien. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. Thank you very much. And back on the photo show as well. So wonderful.
Good. Ian, how are you doing?
Yeah, can't complain. Been out with the camera a little bit, working as well. So
yeah, not so sunny down there at the moment, is it? Or is it?
Today's been gorgeous, actually. I've been stuck in work, but today's been a beautiful day.
Autumn's here with a vengeance, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely turned. Yeah. I did notice in like the bracken and the leaves starting to turn and that now. Some nice shots there to be had.
Yeah, you see around here the trees are all starting to go through that change that we see. So we'll all be getting out there taking some nice orange and brown, golden brown photographs. So a good challenge to everyone to get a nice autumnal photograph now. Okay, so we're going to start off with our talking about the news items we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So we've had a look around what's been in the photographic world of news over the last few weeks. Also, we're going to get a report from our roving virtual reporter for the photo show. Ian, you mentioned it a couple of weeks back when we were talking that you were going to try and attend to it. What was it like? Was it anything like a photo show?
No, I guess the first thing to say is it was nothing like it. I mean, I've been what, three years now? This March just gone would have been my fourth time, and I normally go from with some friends, so that that camaraderie, that bit of banter that we have, and is sort of one of the main reasons to go. So the virtual show was never going to live up to that. Having said that, I have to give credit to the guys that did it, because it was very well done. I guess if the pros and cons, pros, it was easy to navigate. You had some of the same feeling as if you were there. You had the option to go the exhibition halls, go to the speakers, etc. They even had like a chat function so you could talk to some of the exhibitors and that. So they had thought it through. It was easy to navigate, easy to register. The talks were very good. So I went into two talks. One was a portrait session, and another one was actually astrophotography, but that went way over my head. That was phenomenal, but that went over my head completely. But it was really well done. Some were pre-recorded, so you joined the session, but it was just like a YouTube video that was playing. Others use Zoom, so that was really cool. So you joined live with Zoom. The portrait one I did was with Hannah Cousins, who's a portrait photographer based in England. She's very good, actually. So she did a live session from her garage studio with a model, doing some simple lighting setups with one light, all over Zoom. And they opened up the chat function as well, so you could ask questions live. So I fired a couple of questions off and they answered them live there and then. So that was really good. And I think that's one of the best things about a photography show, is the opportunity to learn. I guess the cons, some of the sort of the disadvantages to it were the exhibition hall, if you like, that all the stalls, but the print was very small, so it's actually very difficult to see, who the stalls were for, whether it be Canon or Lopro or something. It was just a bit too small. And then you sort of clicked on them as if you were, standing there looking at the stall, but essentially it would just take you to their main website, which felt like it felt like a bit of a cop out, if you like. It felt like you could do that sort of any time. I guess the biggest disadvantage to it was, and I don't know how other people felt, but for me, unfortunately for the organisers, we had really good weather on those 2 days. So I didn't want to be inside, sat in front of a computer screen. You want to go out and make the most of the weather. So, I dipped into a couple of sessions on the first day, but the second day I was out. But I think they've made some of the sessions, they're still available. You can still actually go in and have a look. Yeah. But they still did, a lot of the retailers still did some show deals as well.
So that's the crucial question. Did you buy anything, Ian?
No, I didn't. I just bought a new computer. I just bought a new computer. So
I'm
well and truly on the leash at the moment with the missus. So.
Okay. But when you go to these shows, do you end up buying anything? Or is it? I have done it a couple of times because you get a chance to hands on some of the kit. And then it makes you. It was one of the things I found when I was. I had an opportunity. I got an insurance claim for a lost camera to change to Nikon or whoever. And going there, I could actually try the different cameras. And for me, quite simply, with Nikon, they were too small. I couldn't, with my big hands, I just felt the cameras too small. So I ended up going back to Canon. But I often wonder, all these big shows, do people actually buy stuff?
Oh, definitely. Well, from my experience, I mean, the way I approach the shows is I tend to do some research beforehand. So I'll have a list of things that, you know, I want to purchase, if you like, if the opportunity arises. And sometimes it's just small stuff. It'll be, you know, memory, batteries, or monopod. I bought a monopod 1 year. But I tend to make some notes on my phone. I'll do some research beforehand, shop around, look at, you know, Amazon, the online retailers. Because although you get show deals, they're not always the best prices. But having said that, in previous years, I mean, the friends that I've gone with have got some, they bought some really, you know, great lenses and got some real, really good savings. So it is worthwhile, but it's always worth shopping around.
Yeah. Well, what I miss is the entertainment value, because there's a lot of props there. There's various people acting out for you. There's mirrors. There's very interesting little stands that you can wander around. And you do miss that interactivity, which I don't tend to go so well prepared. I just go in and I, on spec, quite like the, I like playing with those really big lenses. I've never, which you, I don't think I'll ever buy, but they're really good fun to have a little play with, and some of the other equipment that they let you play with. But I remember I've got a picture from a few years back. They had someone doing some bar juggling and pouring liquid in and throwing it up in the air. And you're invited to take pictures. It was really good fun doing that part of it, but you miss that with the Zoom, which is very flat and two-dimensional.
Yeah, I guess you could liken it to sort of sporting events at the moment. You know, everyone's saying that the sporting events misses the crowds, and it's a bit like that. It's that you miss that atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was a worthwhile effort, by the sounds of it, to do something rather than just letting it all go as too many things.
Yeah, fair play. You know, I have to give, you know, 10 out of 10 for the organisers for effort, because they, you know, they put a lot of effort into it to put it together. They didn't do a half-hearted approach with it. You know, the speakers, I was really surprised when I went in there. The programme, you could have sat there from, say, 10 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the evening watching talks all day.
Right.
If that's what you wanted to do, so they there was a really, you know, full pack program there, which is impressive.
And you said that there's a few there's some online stuff that you can actually go and have a look at. So we'll put a link in here on the screen as to where you can go and see some of those recorded sessions and some of the information about the kit. Yes, there was an interesting. Shot we saw about this megapixel, a 546 megapixel shot of the Stellina galaxy. Now, strangely, it was taken on the Stellina digital telescope that we discussed back on show 6 about this automatic all-in-one camera, which you traipse off into the desert with your little rucksack and your sleeping bag. You set this thing up on its little tripod. You set it on the phone what you want to take, and it does the rest. It tracks it, it finds it, tracks it overnight, takes loads of stills of it. And obviously, it must be similar to what you've done in the past, Ian, that it amalgamates all these. They're only 40 megabit pixel photographs, weren't they? It must.
Yeah, it wasn't a particularly high-resolution camera, was it, if I remember rightly? Yeah.
So is this an amalgamation of loads of pictures, or?
208,000 individual photographs, took 336 hours to complete. And they're saying that the automatic mosaicing that this is done to put the images together to create this one big image is going to be added as an update to the Stellina device in 2021. So if you buy one of those devices, you can do your own 546 megapixel photograph. I'm not sure how many computers out there can deal with 546 megapixel image.
So all that work for the Hubble and the space shuttle going to repair it and everything else, we just got out the window. This little box of tricks does it all. Great. And we were the first ones to mention it. I like that. Good. So as you can see from the picture here, it is, you know, it's a pretty stunning picture. But to be think that's taken on something you can put in a backpack, it just goes to show how far technology is moving these days. Right, yeah. So if you haven't seen that, pop back and look at our show where we discussed that with Neil Dodds was on that show with us, and we had a conversation about astrophotography. So I did like your pun earlier on, Ian, when you said astrophotography went straight over your head. That was a pretty spot.
Oh, that wasn't intentional. I see that now.
Of course, all the best ones never are. That's great. Okay. So on the theme of what we've talked about in the past, we also had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about risk in photography. And we showed this image of this woman straddling a crack in a cliff that was about to fall away, about how risky, you've got to be careful. We heard this week, I saw announced this issue here, that a woman apparently was trying to take a video for Instagram, leaning out of the window of her car, and she let out so far she actually fell out of the car into the live lane of the M25. So not only did she risk of being got hurt in the fall, because it was 1:30 at night in the 1:30 in the morning, she could have easily been run over by multiple vehicles. So sometimes you maybe these great photographs, there is a slight bit of risk, but don't put yourself at risk. It's just crazy, absolutely crazy. Okay, in other news this week, one of us three here, and I'll give a big pointer of who it is, has actually got involved with this ranking show that's on, going to be on Sky Arts. We mentioned it a few weeks back about he was looking for people to show photographs to cover. He was talking about the 2020 and the lockdown and how it's affected people. Now, Damien, you mentioned this, and you've also submitted something. So, and I believe you've been told that there's going to be different shows on different topics. You're on one of the shows. So tell us more.
Well, I'm only assuming I'm on one of the shows because the way they inform you is very chaotic, because it's all done through the Instagram and you have to be alert to what they're telling you about. But as you quite rightly said, they had different categories: family, fun, empathy, beauty, and they were looking at pictures that sort of summed it up. And I picked it up from a local friend who told me about it, and I just tagged my photographs, and then I found that I got longlisted. And the picture, I think you could have something quirky, something that's a little bit different that captures the imagination. And my quirky picture was myself dressed up beautifully at the top with a shirt and tie on, but because it was a hot June day, I'd got shorts on, and then I'd got my hairy legs, and then a real nice set of yellow socks on. Primark.
For our listeners, just to paint that picture in your head.
We'll show the picture in a minute, but I'm sure you know where we're going with this. So above desk or below desk.
And I set up my tripod, and it was an important meeting. I was doing some really important video link with Dublin at the time, and I thought this would be good fun to do it and set it up. And in fact, I caught myself looking a little bit startled because I was trying to work out if the actual camera had gone off or not. But you've seen it on the Slack room, and I submitted and I was quite surprised with the reaction to it, because Rankin 2020 had put some of the pictures up on the Instagram feed, and mine got about 500 likes compared to other people that were getting about 300, 350. And I thought,
you're already there, you see, the public has spoken.
Yeah, so, and then I did want to put it into the selfie category, but they'd obviously judged it as a fun shot, so I'm in the fun shot. And then I thought nothing had happened, because some people were getting emails telling them to watch the show, hard luck. But all of a sudden on Saturday night, this Instagram post comes through with a flicker of all the video thing of all the pictures. And I found my picture was in there. Brilliant. So I'm going to podcast, and we'll see what they think of it.
Okay, well, I hope all Photoshop viewers will tune in. What's it called? Ranking 2020.
Ranking 2020, and it's on Sky Arts on 8 o'clock, free to view. And I'm only assuming my picture's there because of the way they tell you, but it looks like it could be.
Okay, and that's next Tuesday. Maybe I said it might start to run. We've got so many cook shows, and we've got so many shows about everything else, about makeup artists and dance. And it's about time we did a show of photography and, you know, photographer of the year or something like that. We could all.
And I was looking at Rankin's bio, and he's a very good photographer. I mean, I really like some of his stuff. So that was quite nice to get familiar with that as well.
Good. Well, excellent way to end our news section. We've got one of our own in the news. So we've been looking at interesting pieces of new kit and gear that's been announced in the last few weeks. What caught your eye, Ian?
Yeah, so Canon have unveiled this PowerShot Zoom. And you have to go and have a look at the pictures to believe it. It's a strange product. It's a monocular camera, so it's you hold it up to your eye to use it. And it's, I mean, it's quite small in size. It's only 145 grams. It's got a 12.1 megapixel sensor, so it's not particularly high megapixel.
Yeah, strange.
I guess it falls into that sort of smartphone megapixel range. It's got a Digic 8 processor, so it's pretty capable. 1080p video. It's got 100 to 400 mil equivalent zoom range. So and it will do 800 mil with digital zoom. And in the promotional shots that they show on the website, they've got people sort of using it as a like a football match and zooming in on the action. So, yeah, I don't know if they're trying to appeal to people who, you know, maybe are used to using their smartphone but are frustrated by not being able to zoom.
It links in with the phone as well, doesn't it, Ian?
You can pair it to a smartphone using an app, so you can see the images straight on your smartphone.
Right.
It's quite quirky. I don't know how well it's going to take off. It's only going to be in Japan for now, in like a Kickstarter style release. But it's got image stabilization, face autofocus, takes a micro SD card, and it's got a USB-C port.
It's a real niche product. It's almost like
it does look like it, doesn't it?
A monocle you put to your eye.
Yeah, it's bizarre. They just caught my attention when I saw it and thought, they're trying something different, I guess. But I can't see it going mainstream.
It might be. It's a bit like buying an Osmo stabilizer for your phone and bits and pieces. They all sound wonderful when you see the promotion video and the first few times you use them, but is it something you're going to carry in your pocket? I suppose if you're going to a show, something like that now, an air show where you can't get near, something like that, especially if you can view it on your phone as well and record it to your phone, or record it into the thing, might make it as a...
I guess even sort of concerts and things, because a lot of places now, won't let you take cameras in, will they? So, but, you know, a lot of security guards and that probably wouldn't know what you were doing if you held this up.
Interesting. We'll have to see if we get hold of one, we can have a look at it. Okay. Now, talking of niche cameras, we mentioned again on the show a few weeks ago about GoPro and about how they seem to be in trouble. But lo and behold, this week they've announced a GoPro 9. Again, Ian, you were having a look at this.
It wasn't so many weeks ago that they were talking about restructuring and, you know, quite a number of redundancies and that, I think. But you know, they've still got to be churning out new stuff, haven't they? And this GoPro Hero 9, they're saying that basically everything is new, is the way they're sort of marketing it, if you like. It's got, you know, 5K video, 20 megapixel photos, a new hyper smooth version 3 V video stabilization. It's got a color screen, better battery life, and the battery life is supposedly better in the cold conditions. It does auto leveling in the camera. Worth watching the video, actually. I've never owned a GoPro, and I watched the video and I was like, wow, that looks amazing. But it's all these people doing, you know, snowboarding and BMX and that, and I don't do nothing like that. Yeah. If I bought one, it would be dead boring.
I've got a GoPro 6, I think I have, and I use it for, I usually tag it along with other stuff I'm doing. I use it a lot. I take it to air shows and stuff like that, so I can set it up, let it run, and just, it can record everything while I'm doing all the other bits and pieces I'm trying to do.
I followed someone on Flickr who's a surfer down in the south of France on the Bordeaux side, and he takes amazing pictures of the GoPro because he's always in the sea every day. And he's got those curly waves collapsing on themselves. And he's got the ideal place to use it. But it does get a bit boring as if it's attached to a bike, because all you do is get a bottle of mountain bikes going through forests and that. I just found it very niche for, as Ian said, I got a bit bored with it, or it got bored with me. I don't know which was the one.
Well, I originally got mine to, a friend of mine was going to do a track day at Alton Park with his Porsche racing car that he got. So we managed to squirrel into that, brought it in, located it on the roll bar, and we got some great photographs. It was really good. But other than me and Tony, I don't think anyone would be interested in the slightest. So, you know, and I thought it might encourage me to take up snowboarding and skateboarding and rock climbing and stuff like that. But no, not yet. Not yet.
One thing I did notice in the video was obviously that they market it as it still works with all their range of accessories. And one thing they did show was, and we've had this discussion quite a lot, but they showed it with a, you know, being able to attach an LED light onto it and a microphone and turning it into a vlogging camera.
Yeah, I thought that.
And they show a lady walking along talking to it, and. So when you're talking, I think it's $450 for the GoPro. Yeah, we've talked a lot about these cameras recently. You know, Sony, Fuji, and they're all in the £800,000-£900,000 market for vlogging. So this is a viable option potentially if that's something that you want to get into. And the other thing I didn't even realize this was a thing, was a GoPro subscription. They do a subscription service, so which costs $50 a year. That gives you unlimited cloud storage.
You're still fighting the mobile phone, because the mobile phone can do not far off quite a lot of the stuff that the GoPro can do as well.
But taking your excellent idea last week, which we showed about putting it in the bottom of a mug and pouring coffee all over it, which I hope people saw, I did that again, something similar when we were in Italy, tied a lump of string on it and threw it into the surf as we were sitting there watching the sunset. And some of the stuff that came back was quite bizarre, but some of it was really beautiful because it was rolling around inside the surf, and the sunlight, as the sun was going down, you kept getting these red flashes. And so that was a little bit arty for me, but it was quite strange. And I wouldn't plan doing that with my phone. I'm sorry. GoPro, maybe.
That's it, yeah.
Sorry, not.
This GoPro subscription thing, though, I find quite fascinating, because basically, if you're part of that service, you can buy the new Hero 9 for $100 less. So it's an interesting concept. I don't know, you know, can you see Canon or Nikon, or, you know, anyone else following suit?
Yeah, I do. And it's also, from what I can see here, it's also got a colour screen on the front as well.
So yes.
If you're using it like as a selfie camera, as a vlogger's camera, you could actually see the picture of what it's actually taking.
I do think that, you know, I mean, there's not a lot they can do with the design. If anyone sees a little rectangular box like that with a camera on, you think GoPro, whether it's a GoPro or not. But I do think it's a classic little design now, and they do look smart.
I might be tempted on that. We'll see. Okay. And the other thing that I saw, and I think we mentioned it, was this new piece of kit from Ring, the Ring company who make the Ring doorbells. And it's called the Always Home Cam. Let me try and find a site for here. But it's basically a miniature drone camera. It sits in a little square box, cube, and it can be linked to your Ring doorbell or your Ring security system. And if an intruder or something is detected, this camera will literally take off from its little base, fly around the house, photograph whatever's going on, and then it can then come back, dock itself back into its little charging receptacle, and recharge itself ready to go again. But they say it can also be used for home security. They're mentioning things like, you know, you might have forgot on your way home or on your way out, did you turn one of the oven rings off, or have you left the window open, or has the food been left out for the dog? And apparently you can control this thing from your phone as well. So you can actually go and check the upstairs window is open or closed. But if you look at the video, it's just such a neat little gadget. I just, I'm almost sitting there thinking, I want one. I know I have never used for it, but I just want one. It's just one of those gadgets that you want to have. It's brilliant. So have a look at the website. I've put a direct link up here and look at the video.
Yeah, so as soon as someone mentions drone, the first thing I think of is battery life. So what I think is quite incredible about this is, the idea that it just, docks itself and can charge.
Yeah.
And you haven't got to worry about the battery life as such. Because,
no.
I mean, you're only going to, if you do fly indoors, it's going to be for a few minutes at the most anyway.
Yeah.
And you know that every time that you want to go and use it, it's been charging.
Yeah.
So it's a really clever idea.
Apparently the software is clever enough that it will know when it's running out of power, and it won't go any further than its return flight distance. So it can always assume, right, I've only got a minute's flight left. I'm a minute away from my dock, and away it goes back.
I know someone I live with, and she'll be very, very keen to get
Yeah. I just one of those. It's one of those gadgets that for me.
Why she wants that. So when she goes out and you're left at home, she can spy on you.
Yeah.
I asked him to do these three jobs. I wonder if he's done them yet.
The plumbers. Of course, I suppose if you really start thinking the nefarious sides of it as well, you could, I know certainly I could frighten the life out of the kids suddenly going into the bedroom at 8 o'clock in the morning with the drone saying, "Get up, wake up, get up." Yeah, so have a look at that. I just think it's a completely new idea. I've never done anything like this. One of these, a bit like the monocular cameras. I suppose all these companies are looking around at what can we invent that's not been invented before. But I just thought that was really cool. Just looked great, Right, okay. That's our review of the kit and gear that we've seen over the last few weeks. So we thought tonight, as a topic, each week we've been talking about different items. We thought we'd look about when you're coming into photography, a kind of basic kit. What do you need to think about? What sort of pieces of equipment do you need other than the basic camera and a lens, obviously? And also then, how do you go about buying that? Where do you buy that? How do you buy it? It's these days, there's so many options. So I thought we'd have a little chat about that. Ian, we spoke the other week and we started talking about that you thought a good basic 50mm lens was the starting point for most people to start this wonderful hobby of photography.
Yeah, definitely 50mm lens, and it's versatile and it's affordable as well. Obviously you can spend a fortune on a 50mm lens if it, 1.2, 1.4, but typically your 1.8 50mm lens you can pick up anywhere 80 to sort of £100, depending on the brand and the make of your camera. But you can be talking, macro, nature, portrait, landscape, that 50mm range. It's a really versatile lens. It's a very good starting point.
It also helps the teacher to actually move around, doesn't it? If you've got that kind of lens, you can't just stand in one point and turn out a 400mm zoom and then turn into a 17mm wide angle. I know you can get them, but it's that process of actually looking at what you're going to try and take, what you want to achieve, with the limitations you've got with a 50mm lens. And that's why I think, as you said, it's a good starting point for people to start composition and planning what they're going to do. It's all too easy, as we've mentioned in the past, to bang off 400 shots from one position and think, oh, one of them should be good.
Yes, I think starting off, when you get starting off, is looking for that right cameras. And as Ian said, a 50 millimeter lens is a really good start. But it's also thinking about your price, how much you've got to spend. Everyone says, how much have you got to spend, and what's a good starting point with your budget? And I would have thought between 500 up to 1,000 is it, I don't know if Ian would agree or you would agree, Marston, but that's sort of a amount of money you want to start to be putting together to be just starting off. And some people might be a bit worried about buying new on that. And I was noticing I'd read an article that what's the acronym? MPB.
MPB, yeah.
I'd been listed as one of the top companies on the Sunday Times tech list, and they're a second-hand camera shop. So you could either go brand new and go to Sir Wex Cameras, which is a really good store, and they give you advice on buying, or you could delve into the second-hand camera market. But I think you do need... I started off with a simple Canon 500 with a 50 millimeter lens, and that served me well. And then the next thing I bought was a telephoto lens, and that's the way to sort of slowly grow up into your photographic kit collection.
And would you say, if you're going to upgrade, do you upgrade lenses first or the body? I think. Yeah, or if you're expanding,
I don't think it's that straightforward. I think I've spoken a bit about this in the past. You have to find what your limitation is. So, try and give you an example in the past. I upgraded a camera because I found, I was getting into astrophotography, and I found that the camera I had at the time was not giving me the good noise production that I needed, yeah. The high ISOs. So there's no point buying gear for the sake of buying gear. It's find what is the limiting factor. So if you do start off with that 50mm lens and you find that actually you're really enjoying the landscape side of it, and you can't, when that sky goes on fire and you can't get it all in, no matter how far you stand back, you're not going to get it all in, then you might be looking for a wider lens. Or if you're on an APS-C camera, 50mm lens is suddenly going to become a 70 or 80mm lens, you might consider a full frame camera to give you that wider field of view. So it's finding what your limitation is. And going back to Damo's point, I always advise people to look at the used market. I think Wex now, I think they recently even upgraded it. They used to give a 6-month guarantee. I think they even give a 12-month guarantee on their used items.
Right.
So you've got that peace of mind. And providing the gear's not been battered, I mean, particularly with glass lenses, they tend to hold their value, and little bits of dust and that in the elements, don't need to worry about it. You're within that minimum focusing distance, you're not going to see that stuff in the shop. That's nothing to worry about at all. And Wex even say that sort of stuff in their description. There's dust, through the elements, that these won't affect the images. So
you mean all those hours I spent cleaning that filter because there's a little speck on it, and I turned it over, put it on the camera, still they're taking it off. But literally spent hours trying. Oh, fine, clean, and then you're saying I didn't need to do it. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, gear does hold its value as well. I mean, my missus is going nuts. She keeps going. We had a bit of a sort out of the bedroom recently. We decorated and that, and she's like, "Do we need all these bloody boxes?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Because if I do think about trading them in, because the other option works with you is you can trade stuff in, so you can trade a body and they'll give you a value for it, and you can use that against your next purchase. But if you do keep boxes and stuff like that, you're helping the resale value in the future.
I think one of the things is what brand you're going to buy in. I mean, you can either go down Nikon or Canon is the simplest choice you've got of that, or you go, someone's given you sort of an Olympus or one of the other ones, Panasonic. And then I got caught out with Canon because I hadn't realized that there's different lens mounts, and that caught me out. So the body then became important, and the lens mount, and I had to do my homework on that because I was trying to fit lens and I couldn't understand, and I almost damaged the camera because I didn't really understand the difference on the lens mounting and that. So going on a course is quite a good idea as well. that gives you an idea, and listening to the chit chat, what other people are telling you when you go on those courses, and saves you making mistakes that I made when you're buying the cameras.
I think also the old adage is, if it's too good to be true, it's more than likely a lie. So when you see a 7200 Canon 2.8L lens for £50, you know, you need to think, no, that's not, it can't be right. It's not, you've got to be careful. So buying on the web, or on, what's it called now? Facebook,
marketplace.
And stuff, paper like marketplace. If we were talking about Facebook then.
You know, be prepared that there are people there who could easily want to rip you off. So the old day, if it looks too good to be true, walk away and try and find something better. But
yeah, I mean, unfortunately, good cameras and lenses do, even second hand, they hold their value. So unfortunately, as you say, if it's too good to be true, chances are it is.
What about places like Cash Converters and those kind of shops? Have you ever looked, been tempted to look at
any? Yes, I bought my last, second to last lens from a Cash Generator. I just wandered in there. I had a bit of spare time. I was just looking around, and they had this old Sigma 105mm macro lens, old style. So it's got none of this hypersonic motors or image stabilization, or anything like that. But I could hold it. I could have a look at it. They let me put it on my camera. I actually had my camera on me at the time. I bought it. Yeah. And it's been the images are super sharp out of it, and that it cost me like £100 for a really decent macro lens. So it's worth. And the beauty of those places is you can go in, have a look. Yes, one of the things to look out for, particularly with lenses, is fungus. If there's any you can get fungus. Growing in the elements. I've had it on lenses in the past, unfortunately. We lived in a particularly sort of damp flat, and I ended up getting fungus in one of the lenses. And one, you're talking stripping the lens down and trying to get rid of it. So it's a nightmare job if that happens. So that's one of the things to look out for.
And how would you spot that, Ian? Literally looking through the lens itself.
Yeah, literally looking through the lens itself. You might even be able to see it if it's on a camera, but I could only describe it when I had it on one of the lenses that affected me. It was like branches coming out from the corner. The way it grows is bizarre. I guess it's different.
Scenarios,
but.
I'll see if I can find some pictures on the web of sort of fungus in there. There must be something.
It is quite a common problem. I'll put it up here so people can
see what you might be looking for.
And that might be a topic for another time in terms of how to look after your gear and, from
cleaning
it to storing it.
Yeah, I bought a flash unit to act as a secondary flash. And it was a Canon 450Z. And they said there was a problem with the recharge unit, and it was £45. So I said, well, let me try. So I went and got some batteries, put them into it, and it didn't seem to have a problem at all. And as for a secondary flash unit, it's worked really well for me. But what are they, about £400 normally, that kind of thing. So yeah, but so buy beware is the thing if you're looking at it. But again, it's a good place if you're saying about. You might want you might be looking for a 400 or 500mm lens for a particular shot. Find something like that in a place like Cash Converters, it then becomes a good buy.
I'll tell you one thing that we haven't discussed is I've not actually tried it myself, but I've often considered it is before you purchase, if you make, we're talking several hundred pounds up to several thousand pounds sometimes with some of this gear, is these lens rentals options that you get.
Yeah.
And I know photographers that have done it, they'll rent a lens for a day or a weekend before they consider purchasing a lens like that to see if it's any good, basically. Because you are spending a considerable amount of money. Yeah. I mean, it's not, it depends what lens you hire, but it can be sort of £30 to sort of £60 a day on the hire. But another way to look at it is if you're doing a one-off event or something and you want a particular lens, rather than considering purchasing it, you can hire them out.
Yeah, if you're going off, maybe you're thinking about wildlife photography, something like that, and you need a long telephoto for that one weekend that you're going up to the Highlands of Scotland or whatever, or it might be an opportunity then to say just hire for what that one show or that one photo shoot might be worthwhile. Good, okay. Definitely. Right, so what we'll do is I'll put up a couple of links now at the end of the show for people to look at where the places we've discussed about where you might consider. Of course, there's always manufacturers' own websites you can go to purchase direct, or as I say, there's not so many around though. A lot of the strings and shops have all closed down where you used to be able to buy cameras. Jessup's has gone, haven't they? Has Jessup's closed down? I think that's the last one I saw.
Closed the Birmingham store.
Yeah,
they've got the odd one, haven't they? But yeah, they're few and far between. I mean, for myself down in the southwest, that's one of the things I liked about the photography show is we've got nothing down here.
Yeah.
But I think we've got a Wex in Bristol, which is hundreds of miles away from me.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I want to go somewhere and handle some gear, I can't.
No, that's true. Yeah, again, I suppose there's PC World and stuff like that. They usually have some kind of selection. And John Lewis, I think last time I saw, they had quite a selection. It was all Canons and Nikons. That's all they had. There was nothing else for you to consider.
Yeah, and you tend to find that they're only stocked like the key, like a body and maybe an 18-55 lens, if you see what I mean. They don't. Especially, you can go in there and say, well, I want to have a look at the Canon 105mm f2.8 macro lens. You know what I mean? Once you start getting into those sort of specifics, they don't tend to, because it's money and space.
I know we all lust after the latest R5 or the Nikon Z or whatever, but if you consider some of the best photographs were taken on the most simplest equipment, it's quite surprising. Okay, guys, well, thanks for that conversation. It's always interesting to see other people's views and opinions, which we're always keen to get from our viewers. So if you've got some comments about what we've been saying tonight or a question you'd like us to consider or talk about, please send it in. We're here to discuss the whole world of photography. And we have an open invitation to any photographers out there who'd like to come and join us and spend an evening talking for an hour or so just about what they do or what they see or special bits of kit that they use themselves, then please join us and come along and join us. I'd like to say a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is IMN Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got, and they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Macs, and I'm sure they can help you out. Right. Okay, guys. Well, interesting show, interesting thoughts. As always, I glean so much from you two guys and try and do some good in my own photography world. But okay, so Ian, how can we get hold of you if we need to?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, and Damien?
DamienWormsley.com.
Okay.
And Sky Arts.
And Sky Arts.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe you won't want to know me after that.
We're all dead jealous already. You can get hold of me at MartinKelly@Mac.com, or we're all in the Slack room. Come and join us on the BTN Slack room. We discuss everything about the world of photography and everything about the world in general. So you'd be very welcome to join us there. Okay, see you all in a few weeks' time. Good night, guys. Thank you very much. Good night,
everyone. Good night. Thank you. Bye.